Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast. Laughter Permitted with Julie Foudy is back with season 6. From incredible conversations such as with 5-time Olympic gold medalist and 4-time WNBA champion Sue Bird, to gold medalist Jordan Larson, to insights from Julie's life on and off the field, check out Laughter Permitted wherever you get your podcasts. Also, hockey has returned to ESPN. The NHL has started back up, and that means you can stream your team's games on ESPN+, from the Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning to the brand new Seattle Kraken. Subscribe to ESPN+ so you don't miss a goal. Also, be sure to follow In the Crease, the ESPN NHL podcast with Linda Cohn and Emily Kaplan. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, it's almost like the sports world came together to create the Bomani Jones Classic. Plus your stories on why you quit playing football, but first... All right, so that right there was a putrid slate of NFL football that we received on Sunday. And I do mean bad, right? Like, I was kicking it with the parental unit. And so I was like, I'm not that pressed about watching football, but pop in every now and then. And then it was like, oh, this is all bad. And then I tried to watch late games. I was like, oh, this is all bad. And then the night game was like, oh, this is all bad. And it's in the rain. Like, this is not hood. This is not what's up. But with putrid football, two interesting things happened that I think that we would perhaps as a collective find to be a bit shocking. Number one, the Cincinnati Bengals appear to be good. Nobody told us that was going to happen. Like, they've been bad. We've been talking so bad. I mean, I say we, and I definitely mean we, including being me, about what's your man's name? Zach Taylor, the coach there, who was like one of the king's own nepotism. Like, he got his coaching game started because he married Mike Sherman's daughter. Remember, Mike Sherman used to coach the Packers. He coached at Texas A&M, offensive coordinator, all that stuff. So Zach Taylor married his daughter and was getting gigs on Mike Sherman's staff. And then when we had that offseason, where the best thing you could put on your resume was, I met Sean McVay one time. Zach Taylor was one of these cats who knew Sean McVay. He had touched the hem of his garment, and therefore he had gotten this job, and the Bengals looked terrible. And like, they drafted Joe Burrow last year, and he got hurt. So, you know, I guess that's somewhat of an explanation for a level of terrible. But they beat the brakes off the Ravens in Baltimore. Like, they put the hurt on them. And Ja'Marr Chase, who was one of these dudes who sat out last year. He opted out of playing because of COVID. And, you know, of course, that's when our manufacturing of draft stories, we all got into the, is this the guy you want? What about him missing a year? Yada, 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 all this stuff. And then he came in the preseason and he couldn't catch a cold. And then apparently the immune system in his hands went completely away and he's catching everything but COVID. Like, he is out here lighting it up. He had 200 yards receiving. His last game, I think I saw something that said through 7 games, he's second all time in yards. And I am not prepared for a world where the Cincinnati Bengals are good. And it's kind of funny to say that because they had a nice long stretch there where they were good the last decade. They made the playoffs like 5 years in a row. Like, they didn't win a playoff game necessarily, but none of us. Okay. I mean, maybe some of you, right? Maybe some of you in Cincinnati hadn't been beat into submission by the Bengals and still can somehow get optimistic about them. I would not be capable of doing such thing if I was all around that team. But okay, maybe some of y'all were able to do that. And y'all would be the only ones who expected that the Bengals appear to be good, but the Chiefs appear to be bad. Did you have that coming? One thing that's happened, and I got to decide like how it is that I want to do this. So Gabe, I think I told you this. I used to watch football over at my buddy Nick Wright's house because he got all the TVs set up, you know, and all of that. And so he is Mr. Chiefs, right? If you've ever seen him on television, you recognize this. He is the king of all the Chiefs fans. But of course, you know, COVID came around. I have not been there. Like, the vaccines came out after the football season. I need to make it over there because I ain't been there for a while, because it's enjoyable watching football with people who wager. When you don't, it's a fascinating experience into finding out what y'all actually be doing when y'all watch football. But anyway, Gabe, I don't think I need to be at Nick's house while the Chiefs are all right now. They looking like boo-boo. And I don't think he's built to handle that after all these years of success.
The mighty have fallen. That's not going to be comfortable for Nick in any environment, let alone one when he's amongst friends and certainly available to get ribbed by you.
I ain't even going to rib him because he take it too seriously. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes you got to look and realize he doesn't exactly have a sense of humor about these things. I can get all of them about, like, losing money on somebody else. But the Chiefs thing, I feel like I just kind of need to be there for him. I think I told you during the Super Bowl, I sent a text to his wife and was like, is he okay? And the answer was simple. No. That was just it. It was a no situation. But actually, I was also, because I was having a conversation with Spencer over the weekend about this, just about the memory of all things associated with the NFL is the tiniest. Like, we forget everything right away. So take the Baltimore Ravens, for example. The Baltimore Ravens are currently sitting at 5-2. And again, they got the brakes beaten off them by the Cincinnati Bengals. I would wager to say people have already forgotten that they were getting running backs off of ZipRecruiter. Shout out to you, ZipRecruiter. They were trying to find running backs off ZipRecruiter not too long ago in the season. Cornerbacks, I don't know if ZipRecruiter got a cornerback section, but I imagine they were looking for that too. Like, they just lost all these dudes, and Lamar Jackson's been baller. It's like that never happened anymore, right? Like, a team gets decimated by injuries, and then they start losing games. And like in the NBA, if you lose all your players because they're getting hurt, we remember that the whole time, right? We're not going to fire you, coach, because your guys have been injured all year. NFL, that stops mattering. You just look up one day and everybody's just salty, right? Just like, no, because suddenly you hone in on all the things that could be better in the presence of losing. Things that are also probably occurring while the team was winning. But once the losing happens, no matter why the losing happens, you get a trained eye to what ain't right about what's going on. Like, that's what it is. But we forget everything so fast. And that's just within a season, let alone history and trends and the likes. So I mentioned that with the Chiefs because Patrick Mahomes has not looked good this year. And the turnovers have been, I mean, they're there. You pick the word, whatever it is. It's one thing that their defense is terrible, but the offense, while it looked good early, like in this game against the Titans, the offense didn't, I watched a little bit of that, and the offense didn't have nothing really that was going on with it. But something worth keeping in mind about Mahomes. The career arc of quarterback through this point in his career that I think probably fits the best. Like, I haven't looked up a similarity score or anything like that, but I would wager that the most similar career through 4 years and change that we've seen from a quarterback to Patrick Mahomes would be Dan Marino, right? Like, Dan Marino's second year in the NFL is probably the best passing season that anybody has had in the NFL. Look, you playing in the NFL according to 1984 rules and 1984 conditions, and you throw for 5,000 yards and 48 touchdowns. I just can't think of what's topping that. I just can't see what's better than that. That's probably it. So Marino in 84 threw 48 touchdowns. In 86, I want to say Marino threw 44 touchdowns. It never looked like that again. Like, they never got to those heights. And you're not going to tell me that Dan Marino, like, got worse. You know, you could draw a line of demarcation, I think, in his career at the Achilles tear in what I believe was like 1991 or 1992. But you're not just going to tell me that Dan Marino got worse at playing football because the numbers weren't as good or it didn't quite look like it did at that point. No, but things change. And it's not even a, oh, man, they caught up to you sort of thing. But I think there's a lot of factors that come in. And Patrick Mahomes being what he was in year two didn't mean he was going to look like that, at least statistically, again, or even give you like the shock and awe that he gave you at that point. It's the same thing I said about Josh Allen. Like, Josh Allen is probably still going to get a bit better, but he's probably not going to have a season that statistically, or even like quite to the eye, maybe even in some ways, looks like it did last year. That's just kind of how it goes. And so with the Chiefs, I certainly believe that I personally fell victim to this, that you look at how they have performed in the 3 years of the Mahomes era, and you walk into this year with that offense and you see the same players and everything else, and you just take it as given. Oh, yeah, it's just all going to look the way that it looked before. It don't. It doesn't. This happens to just about everybody. Like, it's the kind of thing that really makes you stop and appreciate what Belichick managed to pull off with the Patriots. Like, you could talk all this, yeah, it's just because they had Tom Brady. Look, the Chiefs still have Patrick Mahomes, right? And you still see the way that things appear to be changing. Like, maybe they go on some crazy 10-game winning streak from here on out or something like that, right? But you see the change. You see the difference. You see it's not the same. And this is just a thing that happens in football, you know? Now, of course, part of this also comes to, like, salary cap stuff. Because, Gabe, I don't know what you up to. And, I mean, I imagine that you are still gaining fulfillment from this job. But if you ever wanted to be an NFL player, I think you can go to Kansas City and get a job on that defense. They got to be looking for people. You trying to go?
I can't catch. They could stick me on corner.
But that's what I'm saying. That you can't catch. So, cool, get you on defense. And they can do it in a way where they got you and the Sorensen dude out there. And y'all could be out there running some kind of confusion on them. I don't know. They can give y'all the same number. Just trot y'all back and forth. Nobody will believe us too. Yeah, we can make this happen. I could understand if I went down there and asked for a job playing defense for the Chiefs and they didn't give it to me. I could see that. But I would be insulted if they just dismissed the concept just on its face. There's no way in the world they can look at any other human being and say definitively, you can't play defense for us. Because the dudes you got playing defense for you, and you said they could. Like, you spitting in the face of the average man. Just sure that we can't play for y'all. Like, I don't think I could play for an NFL defense, but the Chiefs? Maybe.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
All right, so I got a lot of people over the course of the weekend who were asking me if I was getting back on that narcotic. The narcotic that they're referring to is the Atlanta Braves. Now, they were asking me this question before they had locked it up, right? Like, they start asking me this when they're up 2-0. You know what I mean? And then they blow game 3, and then people come hit me up, and they like, see, but might be trying to warn you. My man, Julian McWilliams, he covers baseball for the Boston Globe. He hit me up like, yo, you back? You back? And I'm like, nah, you know, like, I have to be honest with you. I believe myself. I consider myself. I see myself. And you can tell me. I mean, if you disagree, that's fine. I like to think that I'm a man of a certain level of integrity. And there's some times where, like, the integrity has to get flexed. And one of the times where I flex the integrity is this one, man. I don't feel like I can bail out on a team and then just jump back around because they got good again. You know what I'm saying? Like, that don't feel right. Y'all are dumb enough to ride the lows with these teams. And so they say something about how God loves stupid people and children. I heard that somewhere. I don't know. But I feel like when the joy comes, I don't want to take away from the joy you got because I ain't been there for the rough patches in the ways that you've been there. So I'd like, generally speaking, like to kind of lay low in these times. I don't do that. Falcons were up 28-3 in the Super Bowl, and I wasn't about to jump on board with that. And talk about one of the best decisions of my life. Anyway, it's a little different with the Braves, right? And it's a little different with the Braves for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons it's a little different with the Braves is the Braves have actually provided me joy in my life. You know, like the Braves are the first thing in this world that was my family that I ever loved and I truly loved and I loved hard and I went through hard times. And some of y'all who were young probably wouldn't think that, right? You look at my age and you're like, yo, but the Braves, they went to the playoffs like 15 straight years. But man, the year... those years before, those were my first years with them. Those were my formative years with them. And let me tell you, they stunk. They stunk to high heaven. And I honestly look back on it. I have no idea why I liked that baseball team so much. Like, I really stop and think about it, and I can't truly come up with a compelling reason. We left Atlanta. We moved to Houston when I was 6 years old, about to turn seven. The Astros, the year before, had just won to the playoffs. I had a chance to bail out. I didn't. I don't know why. Like, there was no payoff to this. My daddy used to say that he felt bad that he had got me into this place where I would be out here rooting for those losers, right? And then it came back around, and it was a win. Like, it's I feel differently about them. You know, I bailed on the Hawks when the Hawks bailed on me, and I bailed on the Falcons because that was just wrong. But I realized, and I had a thought about me and the Braves, which is I may have made a bit of a rash decision. And this is what I mean. Okay. I quit the Braves when they had that year, and you guys may remember that year. But they had this year where somehow, some way, I don't know whose idea it was. I don't know who took a vote. But somebody decided that Brian McCann was the arbiter of what was right and what was wrong in baseball. And the Braves somehow turned into the team that was out here regulating on people for taking too long, for starting their home run trots and all that stuff. They became like the keepers of the game. And so. They did that. And on top of them doing that, they moved out to Cobb County. And I don't know how deeply I've talked about this here. I found that to be personally offensive. I mean, the way they did it was just kind of foul. They didn't let anybody vote on it or whatever. And they just put it out there. But it felt like the Braves were running away basically from Black people. That was very much so how it felt, and the explanations that were given brought that feeling out further. And if you know anything about Atlanta, the idea that you're going to leave the city and go cross the Lester Maddox Bridge to go put your stadium over there, it didn't feel right, you know? Now, that part, I guess it's just the game, right? I guess that's just how it goes. It's life. It's whatever. But the first part is where I say I made a rash decision. Because all them dudes that was on that keepers of the game team, they don't even play for them no more. Like, the dudes they got that play for the team now, I kind of like them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was wrong. I just needed to opt out of Herbs. When they had a team full of Herbs, I just needed to opt out of the Herbs. That's what I should have done. I should have been like, I ain't rooting for these Herbs, as opposed to I ain't rooting for this team, right? So, every time the Braves look a little bit good, I inch back a little closer. Like, when I get a whiff of that one, I'm like, oh, I smell it. Let me inhale it. What y'all working with over there, right? Once I smell that in the room, I'm like, yo, who got that? You know what I'm saying? Like that one, that it does it. It does it. I come back around. And so I was sitting here on, I guess it was Friday night that they clinched. Or Saturday night. It was Saturday night. I was here on Thursday night when they got rocked. But I was here on Saturday night, and it's me and my brother, and we're sitting with the parents. And as I'm watching this, like, a whole lot of things are coming together for me in the course of it. But one of them is, I don't think in American team sports, that there's anything that can get a city like all together or like a group of people all together, quite like when a baseball team is on a roll that you didn't really see coming. So like with the Yankees, for example, there's this expectation they're going to be good all the time every year, like whenever they're in it. That's just what people think is going to happen. And rooting for the Yankees doesn't really look like that joyful of an experience. Like, I covered North Carolina basketball while I lived in Durham, and I'll never forget that 2009 season when they won the championship, and even the 2005 one to a lesser degree, but really the 2009 season. It didn't look like anybody watching it from up close or even afar was like really enjoying it, because all it was is you better win a national championship, you know? But if you take a team and you say that they're going to be like fourth in the conference and then they mess around and get it rolling and like win the tournament or something, that's a completely different thing, because that requires a building action to get you to the point in the end, more or less, right? So like with the Braves in 91, when they had Worst to First and started the run, like I remember that. They were down, I want to say 9.5 games at the All-Star break, a little bit under 500. And then the run started, and it started going, it started going, it started going. I think it was a game in Cincinnati. I want to say they came back from down 6 to tie the score, and it was a big thing because I want to say Dave Justice hit this double. I want to say. I could be wrong on some of these details. But at this part, I absolutely remember. Skip Carey, God rest his soul, said, "You have to forgive me, Dad, but holy cow!" Like, Skip was never giving you a holy cow. That really wasn't it. I don't even know how much Skip actually liked his daddy. You know what I'm saying? He never gave you any Harry Carey-isms, really, when he was out here doing it. But it was this building action, so you didn't see it coming. And then it came down to the last weekend of the season, and I want to say in 91 they clinched it on a Saturday, because the Braves won a game on Saturday afternoon, and then the Dodgers were playing the Giants to close out the season. And everybody stayed in the stadium, and the players are on the field, and they're watching the game on the Jumbotron. But it really is like a movie. Like, when I say like a movie, I mean like a movie like Major League or something like that. You know, like, everything just goes, and you know I'm not a proponent of the concept of momentum, but with a baseball team, as it goes, you do feel and see a confidence that builds as the team gets better and better and better and wins more games, and the energy of the dudes in the dugout. And when you get to the playoffs, right, because the playoffs, by definition, you got to be on some little run. Like, there's all these little things, and most people jump in on a baseball team late, and so then as you do it, you're like, you get to know a baseball team differently than you get to know any other sport, because you get to evaluate everybody individually. When that pitcher is pitching, he's the only person pitching. When that hitter is hitting, he's the only person hitting. Like, there's not some complex play that you got to look at where the guard is pulling in the tackle and maybe you didn't get it done because there wasn't a hole or whatever it is. You see everything what it is. You see who the bums are. You see who the stars are. You see who the guys are that you like. All of that stuff. You get it all right there. And watching, even from afar, as the Braves have kind of ticked up and ticked up and ticked up in this, it's intoxicating. It's differently intoxicating. You know what I mean? And so I'm sitting there with the family, and that's the thing we all got in common, is we still here for the Braves, man. Like, this pandemic has not been great. It is a taxing thing for a lot of people. But a baseball team, I really think, even more than a Super Bowl winner or a basketball team or whatever, a baseball team can bring joy to folks in a different way, in a much different way. And I think that part of that is because you play in every day. Like, you never get out of it. Like, it becomes part of your habit. It really, really becomes part of your life. Like, Super Bowl, you win a conference championship, you got 2 weeks to get ready for a Super Bowl. You know, this thing gonna have games 2 days in a row, travel, 3 days in a row, travel. Like, that's what it's gonna be. And so you are in it. Like, to me, one of the coolest things that baseball has going for it is that you can have a game 6 and then have game 7 tomorrow. Like, everybody got to snap back into it. Everybody got to get back into shape, you know? Now, what was interesting to me about this Braves game, the game 6, that I personally feel is different than any other Braves situation that I can think of, I can't remember the it's game 6 and we about to do this feeling. because that's how that game felt really from the very beginning. So in 91, in the league championship series, game six, they were down 3-2. They won 6-7 in Pittsburgh. They brought it back home in 92, but it still never felt like they were going to win. Then the game seven against Pittsburgh in 92 was the Francisco Cabrera game. 96 had the year where they were down 3-1, and it's the only time you got to be arrogant Braves fan. They were down 3-1 to the Cardinals, and never for a moment did anybody think the Cardinals would go win that series, and they beat them like a zillion to five in the next three games. But there was never one, even when they beat the Mets in 99, where Kenny Rogers walked in the winning run, they were up 3-0, then lost two, and it felt doom and gloom. But never, I can't think of one that was like, okay, it's game six, it's coming to the crib, and now it's on. My one problem with the Braves, as it relates to this, and it's going to be a little tricky, is I really, 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 really want Dusty Baker to get the World Series ring. I really want that because I want to hear somebody then try to explain to me how it is that this dude, where every team he's ever managed had gotten better when he got there and got worse when he left, have somebody try to explain to me how it is that Dusty Baker ain't no good at managing. Because people really, really try it. They really, really do. In spite of all the success that you see, in spite of everything that the players would tell you, I want Dusty Baker to get this. I want Dusty Baker to get this and then go into the Hall of Fame as a manager. I would really, really like this. Like, people have talked about this being like me as my cities, right? Because I grew up in Houston, you know, and then got the Atlanta thing. But I never was about the Astros. Like, I never disliked the Astros. I had any, like, animosity toward them. But I always had my baseball team. Like, there's no conflict about it. Like, if people are like, well, what about with cities? Nah. If there's a team I want to win, it's absolutely the Braves. If there's a person I want to win, it's absolutely Dusty Baker. But I'm not, you know, Astros already got one. The only reason that I would be excited about the Astros winning, and I have to say, I will be excited about this part because, you know, I occasionally enjoy a good troll, okay? All you, I don't like cheaters. You're lying ass. You got so many cheaters you stand for. They just wasn't your cheaters. I don't like cheaters. Nobody likes cheaters. I'm not saying anybody does like cheaters. I'm not saying that what they did wasn't foul. I'm just saying that everybody just has something to jump on and they all got behind it. But y'all ain't this honorable. Y'all the same people that be laughing at that boy in that commercial. You know what I'm talking about. I touched it. Coach, I touched it. Every single one of y'all is out here saying, young man, stop being honest and let the referee do his job. All right? Y'all ain't no rigid moralists when it comes to this stuff. Nah. And so if the Astros do come out here and win it and you can't call them cheaters, oh, man, I can't wait. The Astros just became an excuse for people to throw something at people. That's all it was. Y'all were like, yo, if enough of us are mad, we can just throw stuff at them and nobody will do anything. That's all it was. A chance for you to purge your little lame anger. I will enjoy it.
Hold on. It's easy to say that let's not talk about it as cheaters when it's not against your team.
Hey, Dodgers would have found a way to lose. You saw that this year. I understand where you are coming from. I can see it. Yeah, but see, here's what I'm saying. You were directly involved. I'm talking about the people that like root for the Brewers. You know what I'm saying? The people who don't like actually care about this for real. Like, that's kind of what I'm talking about. Once again, though, for me, actually, I want to pat myself on the back for this. You know, you get to where you're going when you get there. But I believe that this is the first year that I have not had to remind myself that the Astros are in the American League now. Because when the Astros played the Dodgers in the World Series, I was like, that's impossible. That felt to me like when you look up and it's two AFC teams playing a game on Fox. You're like, yo, did something fall through the cracks? How did this happen? But yeah, the Astros, they're in the American League. So yeah, this is the kind of thing, you know what I'm saying, that can happen. I hadn't thought about that. But no, I think I'm going to dig this. I think I'm going to wind up enjoying this. And good for the Braves. Because the thing about the Braves was, Acuna got hurt in what, June? And I wasn't paying close attention, but it sure sounded like everybody thought it was a wrap. But it wasn't a wrap. I thought it was a wrap. Now, don't get me wrong. if I rooted for a team that won 107 games and then had to play in a play-in game and then just kind of came into this series and was just kind of fried, I probably wouldn't enjoy all this Braves talk that I've been given. If that was how I got down, you know what I'm saying? I had kind of forgotten until I had gotten started that representing the losing side, Gabe Bassett. My bad. You're adding to the emotional register. Like, all my happiness is also kind of countered and making harmony with the fact that, damn, all that money y'all spent, y'all still lost. But to be fair, I can relate. 1993, Braves won all them games. They had to go all the way down to the wire with the Giants. And then by the time they got to the league championship series, they were fried and they lost to my least favorite baseball team ever, the 1993 Philadelphia Phillies. We brought joy to Lenny Dykstra. That's never what I want to do ever. So I understand how you in this moment as the representative of the losing side certainly have to feel when you're like, you know, we probably had a superior roster, but unfortunately that means bupkis as we are now going back to the crib and eating popcorn during the World Series as opposed to chewing tobacco.
Yeah, it's a difficult spot to be in, too, because it's like, I love Dusty, right? So you want Dusty to win, but at the same time, it's the Astros. And I hate the Astros. But then on the other side, it's the Braves. I want you to, you know, feel that joy, experience that joy.
Thank you. I'll tell you this, though. I kind of wanted the Dodgers to keep going for one reason. I don't remember the dude's name. He appears to be like Mexican or Central American. But he had a chain on that so exceeded his paycheck that I want to see the payment plan that he is on to pay for that chain. Hold on. You give me just 1 second. I'm going to find this dude's name. And Gabe, when I get his name, you can Google it. Because when you see the chain that this dude had on, dog, I was like, dog, you just got here. Like, it's one thing that chain, because the chains are swinging in Major League Baseball, if you have not been paying attention. Your man, Jock Peterson, he has made his bag a pearl chain. Like, he got a chain with big old pearls on it. Like, but the chain game is something vicious. Okay, Gabe, here's the dude's name. Bruzdar, G-R-A-T-E-R-O-L. I wouldn't watch with volume. I really don't know how to pronounce that. He is Venezuelan. But, man, that boy got a chain. I think my brother looked it up, and I want to say my man has only earned something like $250,000 thus far. And that chain appears to be in the neighborhood. And on top of it, like, he's listed here at 6'1", 265 pounds. He a chunky fella out there with his neck got to be strong. I mean, it's a lot of chain, man. He got a lot of chain on. I kind of wanted that dude to continue, because I don't, if that's the chain he got just for coming up to the big leagues, I want to know what chain he was going to get when he like really got it going. If you haven't heard, it's part of ESPN Nation, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. College football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you now. If you haven't heard,
this first story comes from business.
This is Will England at the Washington Post. I wanted to find out if the grid in this country is ready to take on the burden of powering millions of electric cars, trucks, and buses as the country transitions away from the internal combustion engine in the next years and decade or two. I decided to use New York State for my reporting trip because New York is of course, a very wealthy state. It has ambitious plans of its own for modernizing its grid, and I thought it might make a good example from which to think about the rest of the country. And the short answer is no, the grid is not ready, even in New York State. By 2050, the state calculates that the number of electric cars and trucks and buses on the roads will use as much electricity as if you were adding an entirely new city of 4 million people. That's a lot of power. Now, New York, like much of the rest of the country, is at the same time that it's going to be experiencing this growth in demand, is trying to transition away from oil and gas and certainly coal and its power plants and create all its electricity from non-carbon emitting sources. I went up to Lewis County, which is a little more than an hour north of Utica, which is the finest area in New York State and perhaps in the Northeast for wind farms. And it would look like this is the future of power in New York State, but in fact, that area has been about tapped out. It supplies 3% of the electricity in New York State, and there is few satisfactory conditions for wind farms elsewhere in the state. There's a lot of interest in solar farms, but they require a tremendous amount of real estate, which cannot then be used for other purposes. And New York State is in most of the Northeast. There is the question of the weather and darkness and the sun not always shining. So just coming up with the renewable sources is going to be a big challenge. But let's say New York State can do that. But then there's the next problem, which is transmission of electricity from where it's made, where it's generated, to where it's needed, which is downstate in New York City. The transmission lines in New York are running much of the time at full capacity. Sometimes electricity has to be rerouted away from the city because there isn't enough room to carry it into the city. So you see, it's another great big challenge. Finally, the power gets to where the people are. It has to be distributed block by block, house by house, neighborhood by neighborhood, so that people can plug in their cars and get a charge. A lot of the challenge to these local distribution networks can be mitigated by spreading the demand over 24 hours, and we have the smart technology to do that. But there is going to be a need for a tremendous amount of upgrading by the local utilities to get that power to where it's needed.
So, does everybody notice that it's all falling apart? The whole economic everything just seems to be crumbling. And there's a possibility this is going to be like the worstest Christmas ever with the supply chain stuff. Little things. And they're not even really that little. They just don't sound like they're that big. But something like this. We're like, yo, we need to get on to electric cars. And nobody stopped and said, we got enough electricity for that. Because, Gabe, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't feel like people think of electricity as a thing that is produced. Obviously it is. We got dams and all kinds of stuff, to get electricity. But I don't think that people think of, we have to make it. Electricity has to be made. And we ain't got as much as we kind of need. You want to know part of why we ain't got as much as we need? Y'all out here on this funny money. That funny money is just setting electricity on fire for money. That's all it is. It is basically just selling electricity. All the electricity that's required to mine cryptocurrencies. It's just absolutely a net negative. And the only purpose of it is just to get money. That's it. We've taken down a lot of trees in the name of paper. It's had some negative consequences, but at least we got paper out of it. And I don't mean paper. I mean paper. You could write on it, keep records, stuff like that. At least we got some. With the funny money, all you get is the funny money and what you can trade it for. So anyway, yeah, we all want to go electric with the cars. We ain't got enough electricity. And there's so many things that are not exactly like that, but kind of like that, because the whole thing feels like it's wobbly right now.
In my grad program, they were, talking a lot about electric cars and stuff like that. And the point was made by many of the students. It was what's the point of having an electric car if the grid's not ready for electric cars? Because at the end of the day, the power plants are still powered by fossil fuels. So you've got an electric car, but at the end of the day, you're not necessarily helping that much because you're still contributing to the fossil fuel industry.
Everything is all bad.
The only thing that's limitless is nuclear, which is dangerous, AF.
Yeah, just a little.
All right, this next one comes from education.
Hi, I'm Anya Kamenetz, a reporter for National Public Radio and the author of a new book on children's lives in the pandemic. And I have some news that if you have young kids, you probably already know. Childcare is hard to find and it's expensive. According to a new poll conducted by NPR, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and the Harvard Chan School of Public Health, 34% of families with young children are facing serious problems finding childcare when adults need to work. That same poll also found that in the last few months, 44% of households with children under age 18 have been facing serious financial problems. That figure jumps to 59% for Latino households and 63% for Black households. Now, Congress is debating a spending package that would expand childcare and provide universal pre-K. And because the market is so broken, the problem is they have to both subsidize wages for the caregivers and also give money to the families to help pay for childcare. So it's a big job. But right now, parents across the U.S. are struggling to find ways to pay for the childcare they desperately need so that adults can work and take care of all the other things that they need to do.
I just wanted to put that out there to bum you out a little bit. That's all, Gabe. I don't know if I even have anything to contribute. I just wanted to, just wanted to make your day a little bit worse. Oh, and by the way, everything's crumbling little by little. You know what I mean? Because when you think about this, this is just another link in that chain, right?
Childcare is so important. It's so important. And in other countries, it's free. You know, like that is something that is like contributed to, you know, Everybody contributes to it with their taxes. Like Anya was saying, it makes it such that the family can focus on work. Right. Can focus on getting that money.
Right. We wouldn't have this problem if so many white folks weren't so vehemently opposed to their tax dollars being spent on anything involving Black people. Like, that, I mean, that's really what that whole not with my tax dollars thing truly comes down to. Because what you're describing right there is just, hey, we could all put in on this. Like, I'll never forget when I was a younger man, I was working at a radio station. And I was talking about these guys with these stay-at-home wives. And I was like, I'm sorry. Everybody in my house going to be earning a check. You know, I'm being lying. I don't know nothing about life. You know, I'm like, everybody in my house going da-da-da. And Cat pulled me to the side. He was just like, hey, man. This guy wasn't like the most sociable dude in the world either, right? He just like, let me explain something to you. And he wasn't rude because he understood where I was coming from. But he was just like, it would cost us more money to pay for the child care then it would be worth it for my wife to actually have the job. Like, she would just be working to pay for the childcare that they needed because she was working. And a whole lot of that, by the way, is going toward insurance. Like, protection from lawsuits. This doesn't... How? How? Now, I will say this, and this is the thing I've thought about, like, with childcare and everything else. When women moved into the workforce, things changed. Right. And so this was a duty that people had rested on them. And we never came up with a good idea of what to do after. By the way, this is not to say that women should be home taking care of these kids to save people money. I'm not at all saying that. I'm just saying, but once that became the change, a whole new industry has to pop up. And once that happens, it's just like, ah, capitalism.
Like a lack of respect for the work that gets put in to take care of said kids. Right. That's not a job in and of itself.
Absolutely. Like that is what there's nothing like my buddy Shannon. I don't think he'll mind me talking about this. I'll never forget. I was on the phone with him the first weekend he ever had his son while his wife was gone. And I just remember this is what would be my lasting memory from this. Hey, want to play the quiet game? Let's play the quiet game. The single I want to meet the person that came up with the quiet game. How do we con these children into thinking that shutting the fuck up is fun? How do we do that? Let's play the quiet game. They get over the quiet game fast. Like, one thing about the quiet game, they never propose it to you. You are always proposing the quiet game to them. Anyway, Shannon knew what the deal was. There was no issue with Shannon ever respecting the work that this took.
All right. This last story doesn't, it's just the wildest story. I don't really know what way to describe it.
Hi, my name is Gabriel Geiger, and I'm a freelance contributor for Vice. Last week, the Colombian government finally began sterilizing hippos that were originally introduced into Colombia by the infamous drug lord Pablo Escobar. So Escobar originally brought two hippos to Colombia in the 80s for his own private zoo, and he also brought giraffes and lions and all sorts of stuff. Well, essentially, these hippos have continually been reproducing ever since, and there are now 80 of them in the river near Escobar's compound. Scientists say that if if there's no intervention, there could be 1,400 of these things by 2039, and that they could have a disastrous impact on the ecosystem. Earlier this year, in this really widely publicized paper, a group of biologists actually called for these hippos to be killed, but now it seems that authorities decided to take this more palatable route of sterilizing them. This is happening with the help of the United States, which has donated 50 doses of this advanced immunocontraceptive vaccine, but apparently this is kind of still an experimental idea, so they're actually not really sure if it'll work.
Look, man, one, I still say that, like, Pablo Escobar and them hippos is the weird flex okay gold medalist of all time. I'm not taking any job that involves me dealing with the hippos, period. Seems a little too risky. Like, that sounds like a job that requires you sign a waiver that I would not feel comfortable with, because they're so dangerous. Like, you know, they're like wild fast on top of being really mean. So, you know how it's kind of like if you were just looking at cartoons and stuff like that, raccoons seem a lot cuter and cuddlier than they actually are in real life. Like, raccoons, those are not small vermin. Like, they got some heft to them. All the hungry, hungry hippos and everything else, like, they just make hippos seem like this cute sort of idea. And it's not. Like they needed to make, how did nobody ever make a horror movie about hippos? Like a Jaws type movie. Because everybody like, oh, look at that, the hippo. Dun-dun. And then just eat them. Hadn't thought about it like that, had you?
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. Why quit football time? We haven't done it in a while, so every time we do it, it's...
Oh, yeah. You
know, the gates are flooded with the voicemails. Got a bunch of good ones. So our first comes from Maurice. Here it is.
Man, Bo, let me tell you. So the time that I quit football... So, you know, I thought I was pretty good, you know, all county, all city, all East Bay out here in California, and ended up getting me a scholarship to the University of Louisville. So, you know, you get out there and I'm balling out with all the other freshmen. You know, we never had to worry about the upperclassmen until that day when we stepped out on that field and we saw what those linebackers really looked like. A little backstory is, yeah, I was a corner because I couldn't catch. So that's why I didn't play wide receiver. But the coaches decided that they were going to try us at every position. We got them pads on. I came across the middle, turned back, caught this pass. And this linebacker we had, who was about 6'3", 245, and he was from the bottom. Gold teeth, just exactly like you think. Hit me so hard. I saw orange clovers, yellow stars, and green diamonds. After I got up, I walked off the field. Took off my helmet, walked into the complex, never to be seen again.
Never to be seen again. There's nothing better than just the clarity of these moments. Like, nope, I thought about it. And so I didn't even think about it. I just did. Nope, I've seen enough.
Yeah, and what he was describing at the end there by seeing stars and like horseshoes and clovers and stuff, I only realized after the fact that he was doing a Lucky Charms reference.
Yes, yes, he saw them all. He saw them all.
All right, this next one comes from Cordell, also from the Bay.
So the reason I ended up quitting football, I had a ton of injuries while playing football. I went to high school, hurt my knee, junior college, hurt my knee. But the main reason I quit football was because I had rehabbed for a year, came back first game of the season. I was doing pretty good. I had 5 tackles and a sack, so I was doing pretty good for a defensive tackle. Now, I got hurt in the third quarter because I went up, tackled a guy, and I'm on the pile. As I try to roll off the pile, and I'm about to get up, all of a sudden, boom, hurt my knee. I didn't know what happened. Nobody knew what happened. Come Monday, on film, we see that my teammate decided to run and jump on the pile. But he didn't land on the pile. He landed on my knee, and I tore my MCL, and I was out for the rest of the season. Then, while being out, I got into comedy. So, Bo, while doing comedy, I got the same thrill I did in football. And I was like, you know what? I don't get hit on stage in comedy. I think I'm done.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer decision there, Gabe. He got done in by friendly fire. Yikes.
How often does that happen where you get injured by your own teammate?
I feel like not that often, but I have seen it happen catastrophically. Like when Ken Norton's helmet hit Bryant Young's leg and snapped that thing into two clean pieces. Whew.
That's got to be the worst way too, because it's just that's that football recklessness that comes like with high school and like,
yes,
kids are just going out there hitting just to hit and jumping on piles just to jump on piles.
Yes. Like you got to say, hey, kids, we can't do that. Sorry, guys. No.
All right. This last one, the guy didn't leave his name. He's from Chicago. Here it is.
What's up, Mo? What's up, everybody? When I quit football, it wasn't because of a player or anything like that. It was because of that Hulk. I am from Chicago and it gets cold there. We're playing football. We're not very good, but we are right. Last game of the season come. It's freezing outside. I mean, cold, cold, cold. I got gloves on. I happen to have a lighter. I'm lighting my hands with a lighter to keep warm. My teammates coming over to try to get some of that heat. We wind up winning that game like 6-0. Season over. I'm cool. Turns out one of our conference teams forfeited. So we win, and we have to go to the playoffs. I looked at that temperature for that upcoming Friday. That thing said 19 degrees, wind chilled of 1 degree. I said, nah, fam, I'm not built for this. I sent my back to the coach, take these pads, take this helmet, take all of this. I can't do it. I'm out.
I concur. As I heard what somebody say, they'd be like, yo, you from Chicago, you like it cold. He's like, nah, Chicago, we wear jackets too, right? I was like, you think, yo, you're from Chicago, you used to the cold. So?
I thought the lighter was an interesting nugget to the story. He just so happened to have a lighter on the sidelines, so they were all had their hands over the
line. I hadn't quite thought about that. It's a great point. Where'd you keep it? Like, what was it there for? Like, was that the original plan? Bring a lighter in case it's too cold? But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 days a week. Gabe Essay and handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Will England of The Washington Post. Check out his story about plug-in cars and how the electric grid is not ready for them. Thanks to Anya Kamenetz of NPR. Check out her story about working families struggling to find childcare. And thanks to Gabriel Geiger of Vice News. Check out his story about Colombia sterilizing Pablo Escobar's hippos. Remember, follow The Right Time, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.